From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Sunday, November 13th, 5 days after the national election. It was the first interview, first sit-down interview, for President-elect Donald Trump. He was talking to Leslie Stahl of CBS News on 60 Minutes, and they talked about a number of issues, including the future of Roe v. Wade. Leslie Stahl asked about that, and Donald Trump said that he is pro-life, that he does plan to appoint judges and Supreme Court justices that oppose abortion. And what he said next gave a window into what could happen over the next 4 years. He talked about women going across state lines if abortion is overturned on the national level, if Roe v. Wade's overturned. And there was a lot of questions about what that would mean for New York State and for really for every state. Last week, we heard from some abortion opponents who are enthusiastic about this. They say they supported Donald Trump and Mike Pence largely because of what could happen with Roe v. Wade. And they had some things to say about Planned Parenthood. So we wanted to offer a chance for the organization to respond. And we also want to have a conversation this hour about what the next 4 years could mean for women and for reproductive rights and more. So let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. In studio, Dr. Rachel Phelps is medical director of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Dr. Phelps, welcome.
Thank you.
Also here is Kaylin Rich. She is the director of the Genesee Valley chapter of the New York Civil Liberties Union, the NYCLU. Kaylin, welcome to you.
Glad to be here.
And on the line with us is Michelle Casey, who is the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Michelle, welcome to you.
Thank you, and thank you for having us on the show today.
Sure. Let me just start by making sure we hear the full context of what President-elect Trump said about that. So let's go ahead and listen to this part of the interview with Leslie Stahl.
During the campaign, you said that you would appoint justices who were against abortion rights. Will you appoint, are you looking to appoint a justice who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade?
So, look, here's what's going to happen. I'm pro-life. The judges will be pro-life. They'll be.
But what about overturning?
Well, there are a couple
law.
Of things. They'll be pro-life. They'll be in terms of the whole gun situation. We know the Second Amendment, and everybody's talking about the Second Amendment, and they're trying to dice it up and change it. They're going to be very pro-Second Amendment. But having to do with abortion, what it, if it ever were overturned, it would go back to the states. So
but
it would go back to the states.
Some
and
women
the states.
Won't be able to get an abortion.
No, it'll go back to the states.
By state? No, some.
Yeah. Well, they'll perhaps have to go to they'll have to go to another state.
And that's okay.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's got a long way to go, just so you understand. That has a long, long way to go.
Michelle Casey, I want to start with you. I know you heard that clip shortly after it happened, and I want to get your take on what you think of it.
Well, I think it's clear that President-elect Trump is interested in overturning Roe v. Wade by appointing justices to the Supreme Court who would reverse that decision. Obviously, that does take quite a bit of time to do that. But I think there's a lot of things that can happen within his power and the power of the federal government to do things that would restrict access to women's health care and to abortion without having to have a Supreme Court decision to do that. And there are, you know, serious implications of restricting access to abortion. There's already restricted access in many states where they have put in various legislative actions that have made it more difficult for women to access birth control and abortion services.
Dr. Phelps, same question. What did you think?
I think it would be a public health crisis. I think that right now what we know is, you know, if Roe v. Wade was turned over today and it went back to the states, there are currently 17 states where abortion would be illegal. There's 8 states where it would be legal, and the rest we don't know. And I think that, you know, when we look at restrictive state laws, we see that the most restrictive states and the states that would most likely have abortion be illegal in those states are all concentrated geographically in the center of the country. And so the reality of women are already crossing state lines to get abortions today. But the reality that someone in Iowa is going to be able to make it to New York State to get an abortion, maybe if she's somebody with a lot of resources, she will. But for poor women who disproportionately are affected by unintended pregnancy, she won't. And I think the really core issue and the really core concept that's important to understand is there really is this misconception among people who oppose abortion that if you make abortion illegal, you can make it go away. And we know when we look around the world where abortion is illegal that that's not true. And that Latin America and Africa are the two parts of the world that have the most restrictive abortion laws, where almost all abortion is illegal in almost every country in that part of the world. Many countries where there's no exception for rape or incest, or even to preserve the life of the woman. And those two parts of the world have the highest abortion rates in the world because they have the highest unintended pregnancy rates in the world. And on the flip side of that, you have Western Europe that has the most liberal abortion laws in the world, where abortion is not stigmatized, it's paid for by the government, it's legal, there's not a lot of barriers to women accessing it, and they had the lowest abortion rates in the world, and it's because they have the lowest unintended pregnancy rates in the world, because they have good access to contraception and good access to sex education.
All right, so there's a lot I want to follow up with you about that, but let me just let Caitlin Rich also weigh in on this. And I know NYCLU comes at it from it's a different organization, slightly different mission, but what would you want to say about what you heard from President-elect Trump there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think throughout his candidacy, President Trump has made very clear that, you know, not only does he brag about committing sexual assault, he's repeatedly shown contempt for a woman's right to make private medical and personal decisions, decisions that affect her life and her body. And you heard him in that clip. He's promised to appoint justices to the U.S. Supreme Court that are anti-abortion, to pass legislation that will severely restrict access to abortion. And he seems to not care about that fact, and specifically to defund Planned Parenthood. And even though I'm here today with the New York Civil Liberties Union, we absolutely understand the vital role that Planned Parenthood plays in many communities, in many places, even in New York State. They're the only healthcare provider providing preventative healthcare services that reduce unintended pregnancy, and on which so many women and families in our state and across the nation rely on for care when they cannot afford to get it anywhere else. So, you know, we're very concerned, and we think now is the time when we should be thinking about how New York and New Yorkers can protect ourselves from what might happen. We're concerned about Trump's interest in repealing or overturning or changing the Affordable Care Act, specifically about the piece of the Affordable Care Act that allows contraception to be covered without a copay currently. And so, you know, millions of women will lose that if they strip that from the ACA or overturn the ACA. And in New York, we do have an opportunity right now to introduce state legislation that already exists. There's a bill called the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act. It's a little bit of a tongue twister, the CCCA, which would guarantee coverage in New York for contraception with no copay. Currently, New York insurance companies do have to cover contraception regardless of the ACA, but there's often a copay involved. There's been an increase in high deductible plans in general across the nation and in the state, and that copay can be a burden for many women to get their contraception. So things like that, I mean, we need to be thinking about right now, because we are looking at President Trump taking office in January. How do we protect New York? How do we make sure that we continue to be a beacon for the rest of the country?
Real briefly, Michelle Casey, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York, have you seen an increase in donations or fundraising since the election?
Yes, we've absolutely seen an outpouring of support, both from our existing base of supporters and new people who have come out and wish to help the organization. I think, you know, and there's been many acts of kindness, like bringing flowers to our health centers and things like that. I think the point here, though, is the possible downside to federal funding loss really is outsized to the amount of donations that we are receiving. And so, you know, the donations absolutely help our patients. But it's not something that's going to fix a defunding type effort from the federal government.
Dr. Phelps, you mentioned that if Roe v. Wade is overturned in the way that President-elect Trump talked about on 60 Minutes, there would be some real questions about what happens in many different states. You said that abortion would be legal in how many states? Eight?
Eight.
Is, and forgive my ignorance on all of this, New York is where in that category?
It's one of them.
Okay, that's what I understood. 17 states, it would be illegal, correct? Okay, and what is the nearest state to us where right now we could assume that in this world we'd see an influx of women maybe coming to New York for reproductive services and abortion?
I mean, I think that I don't know this. I don't actually know the status of the states surrounding us off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I would definitely say, you know, looking at sort of just the landscape of restrictive laws in states and what states have the most restrictive abortion laws right now, Ohio, Pennsylvania, potentially New Jersey. And frankly, we already see people crossing state lines to get abortions from us now. We see patients every day in our Buffalo offices from Pennsylvania who cross state lines because there's so many restrictive laws in Pennsylvania and so few abortion providers that the closest abortion provider to them is us in New York State. And certainly in Mississippi, there's only one clinic right now. Most women in Mississippi cross state lines to go into Alabama. So this is already an issue. And I think I think we need to get back to also thinking about the demographics of unintended pregnancy and how, you know, we don't have a fair playing field in the U.S. when it comes to access to health care, access to education, access to, you know, the best forms of birth control. And we know that poor women have 5 times the rate of unintended pregnancy because they don't have access to these things. And those are the folks that are going to have the least resources that are going to be, you know, to be able to access an abortion if it requires going to another state. And so I think that, you know, and I think that we know that, you know, 1 in 3 women in America has an abortion at some point in her lifetime. Like, this is something that will affect everyone. When you talk about overturning ACA, 55 million women have access to no-cost birth control, which has allowed women to use much more effective methods, to not have gaps in their birth control methods because they lose their insurance or they, you know, can't afford the copay or they can't afford the high deductible. And we've seen for the first time in 30 years, since 2008, we've seen a decrease in the overall unintended pregnancy rates in the U.S. And that decrease is, you know, coincides with an increase in use of the most effective birth control methods, IUDs and implants. But those methods are expensive. And what we're seeing is that women are accessing these methods because that cost barrier has been removed.
I believe, if I remember correctly, Colorado was a case mm-hmm. where IUD, when there was more support for offering IUDs for low-income women,
yep.
it the unintended pregnancy and the abortion rate fell pretty dramatically.
Absolutely. Okay. And so what we've seen since 2008 is that the unintended pregnancy rate, which has been more than half of pregnancies in the U.S. have been unintended for the past 30 years, more than half, that decreased 13%. And there was a decrease in abortion rates, and there was an 18% decrease in unintended pregnancy rates since 2008. And almost all of that is due to increased access to contraception and more effective forms of contraception, because the LARC usage, IUDs and implants, long-acting reversible contraception, tripled in that same time frame from 4% of women using it to 12%.
All right, so there's a few more things I want to make sure I work through with our panelists. And then, listeners, if you want to call the program with comments or questions about looking ahead to under a Trump administration, what happens with abortion, what happens with services provided by Planned Parenthood, what happens if funding changes. Any questions or comments, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Dr. Phelps, first of all, forgetting funding for a second, let's just take President-elect Trump at his word that he will appoint justices who seek to overturn Roe v. Wade, and if they do, in his words, women can just go across state lines. I certainly take your point that there are plenty of low-income women who may not be able to do that to begin with, but if we saw an influx to our state of women looking for abortion services in this sort of new landscape, would that put a strain on Planned Parenthood, for example?
I mean, yeah, we would have to change our entire... We would have to change the mix of the services we provide, because right now abortion services is a very small percentage of what we provide, and 80% of our clinical services are preventing unintended pregnancy, which is where I'd like it to stay. But certainly, you know, we are dedicated to our patients and we're dedicated to meeting the needs of our patients. And if that's what our patients need, we'll find a way to meet those needs. And, you know, we are prepared to, you know, we're prepared for this fight, and we're going to keep our doors open, and we're going to serve, you know, as many patients who need us. But, you know, the problem is, I think, you know, when you talk about abortion, it's very easy to think about it in this, you know, sort of grand scale and this very sort of disconnected, superficial way. But, you know, I'm somebody, I take care of these women every week. I hear their stories. I talk to them about the children they love and what they're doing to try to give their kids the best life. I talk to them about their hopes and dreams of trying to finish school. I hear the terrible situations they're in of domestic violence or, you know, poverty, or just, you know, you can't, every woman's story is different. Life is complex. A woman who wants to have two kids needs to prevent pregnancy for 30 years. That is a long time to never make a mistake. That is a long time to never have anything go wrong. And women need abortion, you know, for when things go wrong. And we need to trust women to be that they're thoughtful, caring human beings who are going to make thoughtful decisions. And that's what I see, is that I see women coming to us every day who are making a really hard decision for them. They're doing something that's very hard and painful for them to give their kids the best lives they can, because the majority of women in this country having abortions are mothers of children.
All right, one more follow-up for you, and then we're going to hear from some of the panelists that we had last week, women who are supporting Donald Trump and largely on the grounds, as they say, voting for life, as they said. I'd like to play a little bit of that and get our panelists to respond, and then certainly we'll go through your phone calls throughout the hour. But Dr. Phelps, I am not at all questioning your presenting of this idea of where abortion is highest in the world, where it is most restricted. I don't have the numbers and stats in front of me, but I'm not at all saying that you're wrong. But what I don't know is some of the context. And I guess what I wanted to ask you is this. Those who want to see Roe v. Wade overturned, those who don't want to see abortion anymore in this country, may say, okay, you're making a point about other countries in other parts of the world, and there is some cognitive dissonance. I think a lot of people agree, not everybody. When you outlaw abortion, but you also outlaw reproductive health and education, contraception. There's something dissonant about that, I think a lot of people think. And my guess is the places where abortion rates are highest, they're also very restrictive when it comes to contraception. Is that correct?
That's yes. There's either in Latin America, lack of access because of religious stuff, or lack of access for funding in Africa.
Okay, so could we see a framework in this country where Roe v. Wade's overturned, abortion is very seriously restricted, but we are a little bit more, we are in a different place when it comes to sexual health, sexual education, I should say, sex education, comprehensive sex education, and contraceptive access. Could that be the kind of future we're going toward?
I mean, to me, that does not look like the kind of future we're headed towards, because the same people who want to outlaw abortion also want to cut off access to contraception. In my mind, I mean, this is actually, thank you for bringing that up, because it's one of my frustrations. You know, I want there to be less abortion, because it's something that's really hard for women to go through, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. People who oppose abortion want there to be less abortion. Let's just agree on the world would be better if there was less abortion, and let's focus on preventing unintended pregnancy, because that is the only thing that's ever going to affect the amount of abortion there is. Making it illegal just makes it unsafe. It's not going to change how much abortion happens. It's just going to change the context under which it happens. And so if we could all get together and say, okay, let's do everything in our power to have as few abortions as possible by, you know, increasing women's access to contraception, making contraception free through health insurance, making women have the most, you know, the access to the best methods, comprehensive sex education, but the same folks who want to overturn Roe also oppose contraception. They also oppose comprehensive sex education. So, you know, a lot of what we're hearing about defunding Planned Parenthood or, you know, overturning ACA is actually going to do the opposite. It's going to increase the number of unintended pregnancies in this country and increase the need for abortion. And what I'd like to say right now, so that nobody is, has any misguided ideas that because we're a first world country that we have first world unintended pregnancy rates, the unintended pregnancy rates in the U.S. right now are the same as Asia. They're higher than any other country that has the same resources we do. We are very far from being in a place where we're going to have exceedingly low unintended pregnancy rates. And in fact, and because we have such enormous health disparities in this country, poor women, the unintended pregnancy rate for poor women in the U.S. right now is higher than any other region of the world. It is higher than Africa.
The highest rates of unintended pregnancy in this country are almost in a contiguous band of states in the American South that have the highest rates of abstinence-only education and the least access to comprehensive sex education. That's
Absolutely.
Not a political statement. That is just a fact. And the 10 lowest rates of unintended pregnancy are not fully contiguous, but almost in the Northeast. There's some, I think, in the Rust Belt, but mostly in states where there is very little abstinence-only education and much more comprehensive sex education.
Absolutely.
Those are two facts. So what I want to do is start working through your many questions that have come in. I'll start with Peg and Arondakoit. Go ahead, Peg.
Hi. So while I was waiting, much of your conversation covered the point that I wanted to make.
Okay, that's okay.
Although I am pro-choice, I, too, want as few women as possible to have to make the decision to have an abortion. And it seems to me that people who oppose abortion would also want to reduce unintended pregnancies. And the only way to do that is through ready access to contraception. We know statistically through studies that abstinence-only education doesn't work, and we should stop funding it at all. And I'll take any comments off the air.
Okay, thank you, Peg. Why don't I start with Michelle Casey, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Go ahead, Michelle.
Obviously, you know, I would be in agreement with what the caller just stated, and I think that that is the feedback we're getting from many members of the community. You know, no one does more than Planned Parenthood to reduce the number of unintended pregnancies in the United States. And, you know, that's what we would like to continue to do.
Okay. Guest in studio, Kaylin, you want to respond to some
sure.
of that?
Sure. I completely agree. And I think now more than ever, New York needs to take seriously reducing unintended pregnancies by passing a bill like the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act, which I brought up before. And then the reason I bring this up is that it would make it so it would do a couple things. It would guarantee coverage with no copay, so free birth control for the full range of birth control methods. People don't realize, and Rachel just pointed out really, really well how there's lots of different kinds of birth control methods, some that are long acting, some that fit different kinds of women's lives and needs. And so this bill, if passed into law, would cover free birth control, all these different methods for women and for men. And it would also allow individuals to obtain up to a year's worth of contraception at a time. Why is that important? Going back to what the caller said, studies have shown, in fact, a study by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists showed that when women have access to 12 months worth of birth control as opposed to just 1 month or 3 months, the likelihood of them having an unintended pregnancy is lowered by as much as up to 30%. So one of the best things we could do, I absolutely agree with the caller, is to pass this bill to ensure that if the ACA strips coverage for contraception or is changed or overturned, that women in New York will still be able to access contraception for free in a way that best fits their life and helps them reduce their chance of unintended pregnancy.
Okay, anything to add, Dr. Phelps?
No, I agree with everything that's been said.
Okay, back to the phones we go. And let me grab Bonnie next up. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. A couple things. One is my first question is, well, I wonder how much outreach to African-American communities there's been. I know that can be a struggle. There was a local group here for a while, Young Women. I think it came out of Baden Street Settlement. I'm not sure about that. In which they went around, and I would run into them sometimes at various events, and they would talk about sexuality, and it was very effective. It, you know, didn't have a huge audience. Probably needed more people, but it was they were very good, and they, you know, this was an all African American group of young women, and it was impressive because I know that can be tricky, a lot of religious connections there. So that was one thing. The second thing is, I agree with everything you were talking about. Of course, it's like critical. But the other thing I wonder about, years ago when these subjects came up, we used to connect it more, in addition to the particulars you're all raising, which are very important, to feminism, to, you know, the fact that this is one of the critical pieces that identifies women as being competent, independent, maturing people that can make their own decisions, that stand up for those and the history that all involves, without going through all that now. And I see that there's somewhat less of that. I know that your guests are all, you know, implying that, but I just wonder if that kind of strengthens people, that view, that when I see people speak on that tone, it's very impressive, and I think it helps to push these issues as part of a larger scope, which I don't hear happening as much. So
okay.
That's it.
Thank you, Bonnie. Let's work backwards there. Feminism and its role in this entire question, and are we not hearing that enough here? Dr. Phelps, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of this stuff wraps up in feminism. I think that feminism is something that doesn't really necessarily, you know, people don't necessarily connect to that word as much anymore. But I think when we sort of talk about what that word means, this, you know, all of this is around women being able to make their own decisions in their lives, to be able to live the lives they want to live, right? And to be able to sort of achieve their dreams. And, you know, a woman who can't control her reproduction, who can't, control when she has a baby and when she doesn't have a baby, loses all of her other freedoms. She loses her freedom of economic independence, her freedom to complete school, her freedom to, you know, have a job. You know, this, every freedom, all freedoms that women depend on to live full, vibrant, productive lives depends on them being able to control how many children they have. And the only way to do that is primarily through birth control and as abortion for as a backup when things go wrong. And so, you know, I think that that's just really critical. But I also think that, you know, we need to also think about what our patients need on a broader scale, right? So we know, and that's what we focus on at Planned Parenthood, that our patients need better access to sex education and better access to birth control, because we know women, and disproportionately poor women, are having more children than they want to have. They're pregnant more often than they want to be. They have more abortions than other women. But our patients also need a living wage. They need quality education. They need communities that are free from violence. And, you know, I envision a world where women are not getting pregnant when they don't want to be, but they're also able to get pregnant when they're ready and to bring children into the world and provide for them and protect them and to give them all the opportunities in life that they deserve.
But Dr. Phelps, what about Bonnie's point about outreach to communities like the African-American community?
Yeah, I mean, Planned Parenthood, we're the largest provider of sex education in the country. And so a lot of that is how we do our outreach. And we outreach basically to all communities who need these services, and that includes communities of color.
All right, well, I'm late for our only break, and what I want to do is, we've got more of your phone calls. Shauna, Patricia, we're going to be coming to you. I've got some questions that have come in online, and so we'll continue to have this conversation about the future of Roe v. Wade and abortion and these kinds of medical services and education, contraception, and more under the Trump administration. We're talking to Dr. Rachel Phelps, who's the medical director of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York, and their president and CEO, Michelle Casey. Kaylin Rich is the director of the Genesee Valley chapter of the NYCLU. And I just want to reiterate one point that I made earlier, but I'll say it again. Last week on this program, we talked to women who supported Donald Trump, and they talked about their various reasons. And there were several reasons for each of our panelists. But they came back to their primary reason was they do want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And I understand there are millions who voted with that in mind. They said that when Mike Pence was put on the ticket, that helped cement it, that they believed Donald Trump when he said he would do it, and they want to see it happen. What you're hearing from today are those who work for Planned Parenthood, those who work for NYCLU, and have some serious concerns about what that would mean. So you're hearing multiple perspectives on different days on this program. Back to your phone calls after this break. Coming up in our second hour, Monroe County Executive Cheryl DeNolfo joins me in studio. We'll talk about her views on the Monroe County budget. And in many ways, it's a look back at her first year in office. It's been a busy first year for County Executive DeNolfo, and we'll talk about how she looks back on it, what she's learned, and take some of your phone calls and questions from listeners as well. That's next hour with the County Executive. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Patricia in Irondequoit is next on the phone. Go ahead, Patricia.
Thank you, Evan, for taking my call. One of the speakers on your panel today mentioned a statistic which provoked me to pick up the phone and call. The data shows that 1 in 3 women in America have had an abortion, and yet I'm finding in my own life that women I speak to are very, very reticent to speak about their abortions. And I had an abortion over 30 years ago, and as I've aged and gotten older and become more comfortable in my own skin, I found that it's really important for me to verbalize this, because abortion needs to be demystified. The reality of it is, in our workplace, in our families, if you look at the numbers, we know people who've had abortions. And so I laud you for having the panel on today to keep this topic in front of people's minds. This is a very, very frightening possible direction that our country is moving in. I fully support Planned Parenthood and the work that they do. Planned Parenthood was there for me when I needed them all through my 20s and did not have any health care and needed access to health care. So I wanted to call and say today that I have had an abortion. I've gone on to have a wonderful, meaningful life. I have no regrets about it, and I'm very grateful that when I needed to do it, that the I had the right to do it. So,
Patricia, can I ask you just one follow-up question?
Yes, you may.
You know, you talked about how, you know, you're a little more comfortable in your own skin, which I hope as we go throughout life, we all kind of move in that direction. It's maybe it's part of life. But I'm also wondering if, have you seen any change in this country in 30 years? I guess what I want to know is it easier for women of any age who've had abortions to talk about it now, or is it just as difficult or even getting more difficult?
I think it's becoming even more difficult in my own interactions with women who I meet through work and some of the groups that I belong to, where I have gotten up and spoken about my own experience. I've had women come up to me afterwards and say, I applaud your bravery. I had an abortion, but I'm afraid to speak out. So and these are older women in their 60s and 70s, so that's my own experience. I still sense there's shame. And with the environment that we're in now, with this transition to the Trump era, I don't see how comfort is going to grow. I think, you know, these things will just continue to be pushed underground.
Patricia, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. And Dr. Phelps, earlier this hour, you said you talk to women all the time. You counsel women. Sometimes this becomes an abstract conversation without human faces, and right. You're obviously hearing a voice right there.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, and thank you so much for sharing that. And you really are brave, because this is having an abortion is a really common experience for American women, but nobody talks about it. And so it's easy to think it's something that happens to other women, those women, not people that you know. But you're absolutely right. Everybody knows somebody that has had an abortion. There's somebody in your life that you love that's had an abortion. You just don't know about it because people don't talk about it. I agree with you. I think there's tremendous shame and stigma still for women who have abortions. And so women don't talk about it. And that just adds to this idea that it's not something that the women in your life, that the women you love need or, you know, have had. And, you know, I'm an abortion provider. I perform abortions every week. So I talk to women having abortions every week. And I can tell you, they come from every walk of life. They are high school students. They are college students. They are nurses. They are doctors. They are lawyers. They're 45-year-old women who have kids in college. They're 22-year-old women who already have 3 kids, 2 jobs, and are trying to go back to school. It is everybody. And it's people who are pro-life. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have come to me and said, you know, I'm pro-life. I don't believe in abortion. You know, I think this is wrong. But I'm pregnant and I can't be pregnant and I can't have this baby and you have to help me. You have to help me. And, you know, the reality is it's really easy to say, I don't believe in abortion. I would never have an abortion, until you actually have to make that choice, because, you know, people's lives take all kinds of turns in ways that you would never expect. And you end up in situations you never thought you would be. And part of that statement of I would never have an abortion is running on the assumption that you're never going to have an unattended pregnancy that's going to force you to make that decision. And the reality is no woman can possibly know what decision she would make in that circumstance.
All right, listeners, anyone on the phone, please hang in there, because we've got a wide range of calls and subjects that I want to try to get as many in as we can. I had promised, and I want to do this now. I want to listen to some of what one of our panelists said last week. This is Jessica Shanahan, who was on a panel of women who voted for Donald Trump. And as I said, the panelists all agreed on one thing. They're certainly eager to see Roe v. Wade overturned, that they feel that this would be a very good development for the country, and that they've got concerns about Planned Parenthood. This is what Jessica Shanahan said after a caller called the program to say, you know, you are overemphasizing Planned Parenthood's work in abortion and you're underemphasizing a lot of the other work that they do. And here is part of her response. I want to listen to that now.
Planned Parenthood receives federal funds, $500 million a year. And the main thing that for us was important is that when Hillary Clinton decided that she talked about this, repealing the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment is a very important amendment that protects your right to not fund abortions. And most states have enacted that, have encouraged the Hyde Amendment or endorsed the Hyde Amendment. And she said she would take that away. And I think that just stuck with me anyway. And so, I mean, not that New York State does, because they do fund abortions. And Planned Parenthood, by the way, they do not do mammograms. Okay?
She added that because one of the caller was mentioning the various services provided. So anyway, that's part of what Jessica Shanahan had to say there. And I will start with Michelle Casey there. I just had a comment on Twitter from a listener who says, have you discussed how the Hyde Amendment is discriminatory against poor women? So two very different views of the Hyde Amendment from Jessica Shanahan on the program last week. This comment we have on Twitter. Michelle Casey, go ahead.
We're fortunate in New York State that we have state support to help poor women be able to afford the ability to have an abortion when they need one. A lot of states across the country, that is not the case because of the Hyde Amendment. And so it disproportionately impacts poor women, young women, and women of color. The I think the important thing around the Hyde Amendment is that it really is, it creates a disparity for people who already have a wide degree of health disparities. And I just would add, too, about mammograms and Planned Parenthood. There's an industry standard of practice that GYN offices do not perform mammograms on site. That's a referral out to a specialty service, and that's certainly not something that we do. But we do an amazing number of screenings. We catch instances of breast cancer in our clinics all the time. We screen for sexually transmitted infections. We do mental health screening and screening for substance abuse and a variety of things. We're an organization that sees a lot of women who don't have any other touches with the healthcare system. So while our primary focus is on reproductive health and they get world-class information about how they can prevent unintended pregnancies and have the appropriate screenings, we also make sure that the whole health of the woman is being attended to.
Okay. Dr. Phelps, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I wanted just a couple things. One, just for your listeners, just to make sure everybody knows what the Hyde Amendment is.
Yeah.
So the Hyde Amendment is a federal amendment that says that no federal tax money or federal dollars can be spent on abortion. And so what that means is that anybody who has Medicaid, which is the insurance for poor people, Medicaid cannot pay for an abortion. If you work for the federal government, your health insurance cannot pay for an abortion. If you're in the military, your health insurance cannot pay for an abortion. And so that has been in place for a very, very long time. There are a few states that choose to use their own state funding to pay for Medicaid abortions. New York State is one of those states. But I think it is really important. There is this sort of two-tier system. And for a poor person, somebody who's poor, to have to come up with the money up front, it can be a huge barrier that delays their care and can push them later into pregnancy. The other thing I want to talk about, which is sort of our health services, Michelle is absolutely right. We provide, when you talk about cancer screening, we provide 250,000 Pap tests across the country to screen for cervical cancer, and well over 250,000 clinical breast exams for breast cancer screening. I mean, I think that's a really common, we actually do even more than that around breast cancer screening. So one of the things that we do is we talk to all of our patients about breast self-awareness, which has been shown to be a really important part of identifying breast cancer early. We care for women who come to us with concerns about their breast health or problems, and we refer people, and often, we diagnose cancer every year in some of our patients. And then we also do screenings for people's risks. We do a very focused family history screening that looks for people who would be at a higher risk for breast cancer, and we refer those folks for genetic counseling and screening. So, I mean, we're very focused in sort of doing everything that we can to identify folks and screen them for breast cancer.
Okay, two quick emails and then back to the phones because we're flooded here. Patricia's phone call, I think, has brought some other women forward to want to just show some solidarity. And here's Karen who says, Evan, I just wanted to share I had an abortion 20 years ago when I was 18. I was living in Florida, tried to get on birth control, but never had all the right documents that was needed when I tried to get the services. I ended up pregnant. I did have an abortion, and I do not regret it. It has made all the things I've done in my life possible. And she says Planned Parenthood is a great resource for many things, not just abortion, but for the record, her abortion was not done by Planned Parenthood, but through a private office. That's from Karen. Lawrence writes, just kind of points out that in that 60 Minutes interview with Leslie Stahl, Donald Trump said, regarding same-sex marriage, it's settled. Supreme Court's decided it's law of the land. But then he also said that Roe v. Wade is something that could be overturned. And he says, is that inconsistent? Essentially, does that show an inconsistency? I would just say, Lawrence, I am not a Supreme Court scholar, but we should not assume that anybody on the Supreme Court is not sort of political. Both sides, all sides. I mean, they will make decisions, I think, based on their own views and biases and politics. And I think everything's in play. I mean, Donald Trump has made that clear, that Roe v. Wade is in play, even though it's quote-unquote settled law. Back to your phone calls. Hillary in Watkins Glen. Go ahead, Hillary.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm coming from a, you know, very, very poor, very rural part of New York State, and really concerned about the possibility that if indeed we were to overturn Roe v. Wade, what provisions and plans and comprehensive, assistance for these struggling young women who some of them are going to have either illegal abortions, but others are going to have children that they weren't planning on, and there's going to be potentially great demand for more services than we're currently experiencing. Now, how do we, I guess, in another sense, how do we plan and prepare? Who do we talk to mobilize those needs if indeed this were to come to happen?
Hillary, thanks for the phone call. I've got panelists in studio who wanted to jump right on that. Kaylin Rich, do you want to start from NYCLU?
Yes, thank you. And I think maybe Dr. Phelps or Michelle can speak a little bit more to how our health centers are preparing. But one thing that we haven't talked about yet that I think people need to realize is that New York State isn't necessarily a safe zone if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned. We are one of the states that legalized abortion. But one of the things that happened in New York is that we legalized abortion 3 years before Roe v. Wade. We were the first state to do so in 1970. At the time, it was a very progressive move. But there was also no precedent for how to make those laws, how to change that law. So in New York, in our state law, and when Trump says it'll go back to the states, he's talking about it'll go back to our state policies and law. In New York State, abortion still resides in the criminal code, in the penal code. It is a crime in New York to have an abortion after 24 weeks. And there's also no exception in New York for the health of the mother when it comes to abortion. So a doctor in New York, if it came back to the states, would have to make that decision. And Dr. Phelps can talk about, because I know she's talked to their colleagues about, how do you make that decision in a way that protects you from liability and also protects your patient? What is the very moment when it's about health versus life? And should we be asking doctors to make that decision when they're talking about life-saving for, saving a patient, right? So in New York, while it will be legal in New York, we still have to update our antiquated state abortion law. And as you're hearing on the phones, the vast majority of New Yorkers, regardless of their political beliefs, believe that a woman's right to decide to terminate a pregnancy should be legal and protected. In fact, more than one half of New York Republicans and almost three quarters of New York Democrats, so that's Republicans and Democrats, believe abortion should be legal. And to do that, so one of the things that we should do is strengthen our state law. Women should not be considered criminals. We should move our state abortion law into the public health code where it belongs, where it should be regulated. And we can't let our politicians in New York continue to pass the buck on updating our state laws. We've been asking for this for years. We're going to continue to ask for it, especially in 2017, as President Trump is promising that his Supreme Court will overturn Roe v. Wade. New York needs to take steps to codify Roe v. Wade into our state laws.
Okay. Dr. Phelps?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I really want to follow up on that because I think your concern is incredibly valid. I think it's an important thing to remember. Again, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, all of the unintended pregnancies that are currently ending in abortion are not going to go away. There are 1 million abortions in this country every year. So you're going to now have one. So if you assume that none of those women have an illegal, unsafe abortion, which you're going to have 1 million unwanted children born into this country every year. And those children are going to be disproportionately born into families that are poor, that already have children, and that are struggling to provide for the children they already have. We're also living in a country right now where 750,000 children are neglected and abused every year, and nearly 500,000 children are living in an overwhelmed foster care system. And before I trained to do the work that I do now, I was a pediatrician, and I saw children who were the victims of child abuse, and I saw what happens to children who are brought into this world by people who can't or don't take care of them. And it is really ugly, and it is very tragic. And so for me, this all comes down to, you know, bringing a child into the world is one of the biggest responsibilities you can ever have. It's one of the biggest decisions you can ever make. And the women that I see take that really seriously, and they and I think women here and around the world will risk their lives rather than bring a child into the world that they cannot protect and provide for. But we need to be very worried, because we will see a million children a year brought into this country. And how are those children going to be fed and clothed and housed and educated?
All right. We have to keep it moving between now and the end of the hour. A lot of people want to weigh in. John and Sotis next up. Go ahead, John.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
A large public opinion problem that Planned Parenthood has, in my opinion, is that it's so associated with abortion. And for a lot of people, that association makes the entire organization toxic, even though I think 95%+ of its services are not abortion-related. I was wondering, why doesn't Planned Parenthood make a branding change in which the Planned Parenthood brand would become strictly associated with abortion services, and some other brand would become associated with the other 95% of services? I was wondering if Planned Parenthood has considered that sort of branding distinction to make the organization less polarizing.
All right, Bruce, that's John and Sotis. Thanks for the phone call. And let's have Michelle Casey, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York, take that. Go ahead, Michelle.
Thank you for the question. I think that I've heard that point brought up before, and we feel very strongly that reproductive health should not come with judgment. And I think if we were to divide off abortion services from our family planning and reproductive health, that it would play into the judgment and shame that Dr. Phelps so eloquently spoke about, that we don't think should be a part of reproductive health care. And so it's just something we wouldn't be willing to do.
Okay. And Jackie wants to know, Michelle, kind of touching on this funding question from earlier, she says, I keep wondering how close Planned Parenthood is to finding a big donor or getting enough private donations to not have to deal with federal funding at all and these threats of cut funding. I think you said earlier, Michelle, that even the influx of donations since the election wouldn't cover a significant or a drastic federal funding cut or elimination. Or how would you answer that?
Right. So about a third of our funding currently comes from the federal government. And the, you know, increases in donation, which for our affiliate is over $6 million, the increase in donations that we've received certainly don't come to that level of financing. The other issue is some of the things that are coming down from the new nominee, Tom Price, who's in line to become the next head of HHS,
yep,
is to block grant Medicaid to the states and reduce Medicaid funding to the states significantly. And so that has the potential to impact people who live in poverty or on the fringes even more substantially. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could impact us across the board, and more importantly, impact our patients in a significant way, not just in the reproductive health, but in overall health care.
All right, this is a terrible idea, but I'm going to do this to Dr. Phelps, because we only have 45 seconds, but I just had several questions from listeners who said, in the last debate, Trump was talking about late-term abortions in a way that was, in their view, not accurate. Can you say something briefly about, he talked about, quote, ripping babies out in the last day of pregnancy, real briefly. What would you say to that?
He was describing a C-section. I mean, honestly, like, that is not something that is real. That is false. I mean, that there's no such thing as an elective abortion post-viability. Any abortions that are done post-viability are done because of very severe health problems for the woman or for the baby. And certainly they would not be done a day before she's going to deliver. That's just ridiculous.
Did you have a problem with that? I mean,
certainly, yeah, I mean, I think that he was saying something.
A lot of people responded to that.
Right. I think he was saying something that was incredibly divisive and incredibly, you know, sensationalistic and based not in any bit in medical fact or the reality of the world and what happens.
Well, we tried to answer as much as we could of your listener questions and a wide range of subjects related to what happens going forward under the Trump administration. Now, there's a lot we still don't know, but we'll continue to have these conversations to let you know what the impacts will be. And again, we had a panel last week who wants to see Roe v. Wade overturned. You're hearing today from Planned Parenthood and NYCLU about their concerns about what the impacts would be. And I want to thank Michelle Casey, President and CEO. Thank you for being on the phone with us, Michelle. Nice having you.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Rachel Phelps, Medical Director of Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Thank you for being here, Dr.
Thanks so much for having us.
Kaylin Rich, the Director of the Genesee Valley Chapter of NYCLU. Nice to see you as well, Kaylin.
Yeah, nice to see you as well.
All right, short break. More connections next.